Welcome to Choosing Leadership, a podcast for high performers with big dreams and for leaders who know that they are more powerful than the level that they are currently playing. I am Sumit Gupta, your host and the founder CEO of the Deploy Yourself School of Leadership. I am here to help the best leaders get better and to help organizations massively improve their output and impact, and at the same time, eradicating workplace stress. Yes. Completely eradicating, not just reducing, completely eradicating. I believe in creating a future and a work culture where people wait for Mondays, not Fridays, and get to do their most meaningful work. The aim of this podcast is not to provide you more content, but instead shift the context under which you operate. This podcast is titled Choosing Leadership because that is what leadership is, a choice. In each episode, I will celebrate leaders who have made such choices, which are not always easy and comfortable, but which has helped them get to where they are today. And let us celebrate the leader in us for choosing to move over our fears, for choosing to be motivated by something bigger than ourselves, and for choosing to deal with every challenge that comes on the way. Let us celebrate you right now for stepping into the unknown and taking courageous action, as those were the moments when you chose leadership. At the end, I will share how you can be our next guest on this podcast. And with that, let's get started. I had the pleasure of hosting Andres, the co-founder at Fuse, on the Choosing Leadership podcast. Born in the US but raised in Bolivia, Andres reflects on the benefits of growing up in a resource-limited environment, emphasizes the scrappiness and resilience it instilled in him. He envisions making financial institutions more efficient, not just for corporate success, but also to benefit individuals seeking access to credit. He candidly discusses the challenges of scaling a startup, emphasizing the importance of creating a lasting culture and not forgetting the personal aspects of life amid professional pursuits. He emphasized the importance of blind spot and recognizing them, embracing change, and maintaining a balance between work and life. Welcome, Andres, to the Choosing Leadership podcast.
Hi, Sumit. How are you? Good morning. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you here. Why don't you start by sharing a little bit about you and what is it that keeps you busy these days?
Perfect. Yeah. I'm born in the United States. I was raised my entire life in Bolivia and South America. To be precise, I come from a family that has been in the auto space for a good time. My grandfather was a race car driver. My dad has been working in the auto space for a good chunk of his career. And my first job out of high school was selling cars. I helped my parents pay for college here in the U.S. By working at a dealership in Northern Virginia. Then I spent 10 years on Wall Street investing in tech and business services companies. I went to get my MBA at Harvard almost 9 years ago now. That's where I met my co-founder. And a little bit over 2 years ago, almost three now, we decided to join forces to build a tech company focused on the consumer lending space, originally aimed at direct-to-consumer, meaning we actually had a brand that was customer-facing. And within a few months of launching that business, the lenders to which we were actually selling loans started asking us, instead of selling us loans, why don't you sell us software? So that's the genesis story. It's reviews. We raised millions of dollars of venture capital ever since. And today our target market is essentially lenders throughout the world, particularly focused in the US today, though, trying to make their origination systems far more automated, far easier to integrate, far more accessible for non-technical teams. And with dashboards that really reflect their day-to-day operations.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I would love to go a little bit more into your backstory. So what you shared about growing up in Bolivia and what you observed. So how has that shaped you as a person, as a leader, as an entrepreneur? Yeah. What do you think has been some of the benefits to being, growing up in that scenario, given what you are doing today?
Yeah, I think that growing up in Bolivia, I always had this goal of coming to America and competing at the highest level. So you kind of live your entire life kind of thinking, hey, that's the league in which I want to compete and build something. I always thought about the US as the land opportunity and like coming here to start something or study and things like that. And I think to some extent, to every extent, and not to some extent, the US has delivered in terms of actually giving me those opportunities. Mm. What I would say, of course, I didn't choose to grow up in Bolivia, but I'm grateful that my parents chose that for us. I think it gave me a sense of family or being surrounded by my grandparents and elements that today I cannot offer to we have a newborn at home. And it's different to grow up in an environment in which you're far away from family. And there's natural trade-offs, so to speak. I would say from a business perspective, in Bolivia, you grew up with much more limited resources, right? So mm-hmm. you learn to be a little more scrappy and like in the way that an entrepreneur that it's bootstrapping or dealing with very few resources and needs to be good at. And I think that growing up in a developed country gives you that, right? Because we don't have the top technology. We do not have like top XYZs mm-hmm. to do certain things. So you do what you can with what you have. And that in itself, it's something that perhaps I would have missed had I not grew up here. Of mm. course, there's a plethora of reasons why it's probably better to grow up in America. But I'm trying to illustrate for you why I think Bolivia was a phenomenal place for me to forge my character to where I am mm. today.
Yeah. And I can relate to that as an immigrant myself, that drive that you're mentioning, that willingness to succeed. But what I want to ask you is that, is there a flip side to that? Is there a place where you take it too far and then that creates maybe extra pressure or something which maybe is not beneficial? Yeah,
I think that sometimes it's still, even I've been in the US almost 20 years now, and I still find myself thinking about in terms of cost of when I was like an 18-year-old, right? And sometimes I get shocked by when someone tells me like this cost this, although like I completely rewired my brain to think, okay, in the context of America, that's the price. I still always push back whenever I think that something can be done in a much more efficient way. The fundamental component there, like it's to not be penny wise and pound foolish, right? Like mm-hmm. it's important to be frugal. It's just, where are you frugal, right? Because that's the part. And whenever you're actually going to be, whenever you're actually going to deploy spend a lot of something, you better do a lot of research on just making that decision important, right? Like being on hiring, being on a vendor, being on a project. And that level of preparation is something that I think Bolivia gave me, because you have, if you're with limited resources, you better prepare a budget and I have a sense of what's the best path forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And does that stop you from making fast decisions or big, bold bets, especially where finances are involved?
I think it's important to know that you have that blind side and have someone to counter that, right? I think the first step is recognition that maybe that frugality could get in the way. And having someone, in this case, would be like a teammate or your co-founder, they'll say, okay, like this is the counter to that is inaction, right? And being able to have a healthy conversation around it. And that's it. In my case, to being very open to change your mind when the facts mm-hmm. change, right? Like, I love that saying I think it's attributed to Keynes, right? Like, when the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do? I'm very open to have my mind change if someone presents to me better facts.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think recognition or the awareness of it is already half the battle won, because you're not stuck with a viewpoint and you can observe it. And if you can observe it, then you can do something different or you can choose differently. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So this was your backstory, right? Can you share a bit more about the future? Where are you headed? What is the vision that you see for yourself personally as well as for the company? Yeah.
I mean, in going back to growing up in Bolivia, right? Like, I grew up in an environment in which financial institutions were pretty fragile. Having immigrant parents, I always saw banks as the place to where we went to get the money that was being sent to us to continue living a good life in Latin America. And I had always seen banks through very positive lenses, right? And not only banks, credit unions, finance companies, you name it. So coming to America, I came to America in the midst of the financial crisis, right? So I saw fragility of what could, of the things that could go, that can go wrong with financial institutions. So I think that having that early exposure and day-to-day exposure with lenders made me really think that, hey, I want to make these institutions that are vital for our economy more efficient. And not just because I want to make them efficient as just going concerns or just corporations. I want to make them more efficient because the ultimate beneficiaries of an efficient financial system are humans, right? Like it's you and I, any common person in this world that I could trying to get access to credit, to go to school, to get a loan for this small business, you name it, right? Buy a gift, being approved to have that loan. In most instances, aside from like risk, it's a function of, hey, like how, what's the cost of originating that loan? And if you make that cost lower and thus also we could turn that lender more efficient, more people are going to be said yes. And if more people are being told yes, it's a huge change, right? Like it's in essence, like the multiplier effect of lending is well known. And especially well done lending, it's a multiplier net benefit for society. So being able to do that with technology and at the scale that you can impact it is something that like I want to make in my life mission, right?
Yeah. And what do you see are the biggest challenges on your way, either personally for you as a founder, as a CEO, or for your organization as a whole?
I think that as an organization, there's thousands of banks here in the US and even more or outside of the US. It's how can we actually convince people that this is, and how can we spread the message that uses like that platform that will enable them to automate better, that will enable them to include non-technical teams better. Mm-hmm. So that is an effort that is going to take a lifetime, right? But I'm convinced that building this operating system basically for lenders that enables them to build on top of that applications and solutions, so it's something that is worth pursuing. From my perspective, it's just making sure that in the process of juggling to build this, I don't forget the other things that matter in life, right? Like we can talk about the beauty about building software for lenders, but we also are human beings and we have families. So hopefully along the way, I don't forget about the other things. Mm. And I keep myself reminding that there's we have parents, we have siblings, we have wives and husbands and all that, right? So that kind of stuff it's important that we, the family as a whole, doesn't forget that although our mission is our customers, that we also have other components of our lives that are fundamentally important.
Yeah. And in your role as a CEO, what is the biggest pain point that you see, especially as the organization itself grows? How does your role is evolving, and what are the growth areas for yourself?
Yeah, I think it's at a startup level is super exciting, right? Like it's very easy to rally the troops and all that. But as you get bigger and bigger, the touch points that you will have with more employees will be naturally perhaps reduced, right? Uh-huh. Because they're just like when you're like 10, 20, 30, you can have those one-on-ones with people, get to know each other. But as you turn into 100 people and like you really talk about a multinational corporation, like that gets reduced, right? So being able to create a culture that outlives your presence in the room and your presence in the organization is very important, right? It's setting that foundation, even at this early stage, is very important, right? And sometimes the foundation that you set might seem a little bit as an overkill in the very beginning, because like it's a foundation that is perhaps bigger than like what the team is. It creates much your ability, scalability for the organization, because you're prepared to form a much larger team as you go along. And that creates an opportunity for a reduction of growing pains that could happen as the organization scales.
Yeah. And I think not just that, like you need to be a different kind of a leader. So you need to exercise different parts of your personality. And you spoke earlier about retraining your mind. So can you share a bit more about like, how do you invest in your own growth? How do you invest in your own leadership so that the work doesn't get all consuming? And as you said, like, you have time for family, you have time for other things which are important.
Yeah. I think that first and foremost is like reading as much as possible. Aside from taking time with family, like as a staying informed and in the loop is something that like I cannot stress enough how important it is. Like for me, like having that Fox mindset, right? Because I think that as a founder, you can, especially in the early days, that concept of the hedgehog and the fox is something that like, it's always in my mind. After 10 years as an investor in which you're naturally a fox, meaning very little about a lot of things, it was my day to day. Whereas now when you're starting a business, a lot about this one thing, right? So I think that not losing the cunningness of the fox is very important, right? Knowing what's out there, right? What are your clients also thinking that it's, they're not only thinking about the loan origination system all the time, right? They think about deposits, if they're part of their institution, think about risk. They think about inventories. They're thinking about the macro environment. They're thinking about like sports too, right? Being able to have that holistic mindset and think about being able to be on the loop with all of that is something that I find pretty cathartic and decompressing. And I bring that, I think, to the team, like just to, so that we know that there's a plethora of other things that come into play when people are making that decision.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you arrange for feedback, right? Because when we are in the in the heat of things, we don't see feedback. And feedback is the best way to learn faster. So how do you work with people around you who support you so that you get direct feedback, even sometimes tough feedback or feedback which you don't want to hear?
Yeah, no, feedback is, it's a gift, right? So we actually, going back to a culture and creating a foundation, that's something that like from day one has been a student organization, right? Like feedback loops that are codified. So it's not, because sometimes you just set it up and you say, oh, it's our culture. But like sometimes culture needs to have some codes, right? Like you see it in religion, you see it in like national laws. Corporations and startups can actually do that too, right? Just put it down, right? Like, and create a method for which that by which people can follow it, right? And expect that, and so that you are not just talking, you're actually like actual something that everyone can hold accountable. Even as I mentioned at the beginning of organization, could be perceived as overkill. Reality is that it pays huge dividends as you scale.
Yeah. So can you share an example of like, how have you codified that?
It's like quarterly reviews, right? Like the way that like we run sprints, like I can tell you, like everyone has, we run sprints, even if we're not the ones that are not engineers, I have sprints that I keep my entire team on track, right? Of course, I'm not going to tell the nitty gritty details, but I explain to them, like, this is what I'm doing. The same way you have stand-ups, like, for 5 minutes in the morning, you tell them like, this is what I'm going to the next 2 weeks. This is where I am. So everyone is in track. It's informed of what everyone is doing. And at the same time, you create feedback loops for the employees so that they know where they stand with their organization, right? Like you're doing well, or in similar fashion to what you have in consulting companies up or out. We also have a culture of excellence, right? When people interview at Fuse, we explain to them that it's an eight, we're creating here an A team that works hard. There's a lot of expectations around what the culture is, and there is no surprises, right? Like we tell people, if you want to work here after the first round of interviews, we actually ask them to read about Fuse and be like, is this a culture you actually want to work at? Because this is how we operate. This is what we consider excellence here. And if it doesn't align with your values, then it's okay. It's just not going to be a match.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for sharing that, like with a practical example. So if you could wake up tomorrow having any new skill or ability, what would you like that to be?
That's a great question. Actually, no one's ever asked me that. Let me think. I want to give you not necessarily shooting from the hip response, but I mean, probably this is more unique to the new role, but I do think that like when I think about people like starting their careers, it would have been nice to learn a little bit of code. I did a lot of math and that kind of classes in school, and like physics and like more economics type of classes, even at exploratory level only. And I do probably recommend, I would have liked to know how to code a little bit more, at least not. And I think that's, I could still catch up.
Yeah.
A process of like trade-offs of things, like other things that we need to do here. But I'd say coding will be something that will come in pretty handy, and it will enable me to perhaps have more nuanced conversations sometimes with certain type of clients. But it is just a very moment specific type of role, type of talent that'll be nice to have.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. So earlier you mentioned about like other parts of life. We are human beings. So can you share like what else do you do that maybe is like not so visible when you work with people, when you work with your clients, which is an important part of you, but it's not like visible on the surface.
In terms of like side things that I love, right? I love aviation, right? Like it's a personal passion of mine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The amount of reading that I do about planes, kind of pointless, but I find it a fascinating industry. Just I'm still, every time anything related to that and like astrophysics has always been like an area that I've always been fascinated by. But I would describe I would call it like not even hobbies, but more just tangential area of interest that I have always found awesome. And yeah, those are probably like some that most people would not know. Not something that I'm like regularly speaking about.
Yeah. And does that help you in any way as a leader to de-stress, or does that contribute to what you do at work?
Aviation, I don't think aviation as much.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say learning about space and time, like just anything related, like with just being able to understand how precious is life in the context of the universe. And the fact that we can actually have this conversation, but at the same time, the humbling nature of it, right? Like how small and infinitely, how little we matter in the context of the broader universe, but at the same time, how much of a miracle it is that life actually exists, and that and the chances other lives existing in other planets, that really makes me think in a very recurring basis of just what are you going to do today with your life, right? It's not only like this month, it's every day you wake up and be very intentional about this finite moment in this infinite universe.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think aviation can do that, right? It can give you that zoom out perspective. And you have that, can give you that humility, but also what you said, right? That preciousness about life itself, and that even if you're dealing with a struggle or a challenge, you can see that in that bigger context.
And then you have all this brilliant mind that have figured out all these things that like we're fascinated by. And we're just trying to fix a very specific software problem, right? So it makes you really appreciate the concept of it's not rocket science, right? So you will be able to fix it.
Absolutely.
Come up with a split.
Yeah. And I do support a lot of founders and work with them. So it's quite paradoxical, right? That sometimes we think that by going deeper, we will go faster. But sometimes by stepping away, we can actually see parts of the puzzle which we don't see. So stepping away allows people to go faster or to take shortcuts or to do something which you would not have if you like have your head down in the woods, as you say. So thank you for like sharing that as well. Perfect, Andres. I think as we end our conversation also, what I would like to listen from you is like for anybody who's listening, who is curious about not just what you do, but also how you do it, what is the best way for them to reach out to you, to stay in touch?
I think LinkedIn is absolutely the best way. I check it on a very recurring basis. And now I'm happy to chat with people that are starting their career or at any stage in their career and are interested about chatting about technology, finance. They can feel free to reach out to me and I'll do my best to make time for it.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I will make sure to include those links with the show notes. And as we end, I would like to wish you all the best for everything that lies ahead for you as a CEO. And I think you mentioned you had a newborn, so also as a father.
Yeah. Thank you, Sumit. I appreciate it. I hope you have a great 2024 too.
Thank you. Yeah. The same to you. It was a pleasure. That's it for this episode of Choosing Leadership with Sumit Gupta. I choose leadership every time I record this podcast. And I invite you to do the same. I invite you to design a life of joy, meaning, pride, and satisfaction, not just for yourself, but for everybody around you. If you got something out of this episode, would you share this episode on social media? And if you know somebody who would be a great guest, can you tag them on social media to let them know about the show? And if you are a leader who wants to acknowledge how far you have come and have big dreams for the future, please reach out to me to be a guest on this podcast. And I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. This is what I do most naturally, to lovingly and gently provoke you, to help you see your own light, to help you see what you are already capable of. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, go to deployyourself.com and subscribe to my newsletter or follow me on LinkedIn. I want to thank everyone who contributed to making this show a reality. And I want to thank you for listening. Always remember that you are enough, you are loved, and you matter. This is Sumit. Until next time, keep choosing leadership.